This is the Clark County Clean Water Commission meeting on Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018.
So, Brendan?
Present.
Jeremy has excused absence. Michelle?
Present.
David?
Here.
Holly?
Present.
Mark?
Here.
Josh?
Here.
Janice is not here. And I'm here, Marie Lamont. So has everyone had an opportunity to review the packet of the minutes and the agenda? Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
You still want to look at
them?
Oh, you said. I said, do I have a motion?
Yes, it's done. Second.
Okay. The minutes are approved. Time for public comment. We do not have any public in the audience. So Dean is not here tonight. We're going to skip the home charter and table that for another meeting. And then Andrea will go in with the public records training.
So it turns out, according to state law, that all commissions, advisory boards, and task forces need to complete this open government training that's going to cover government ethics, Open Public Meeting Act, and Public Records Act. However, the attorney's office right now is trying to figure out how they want to implement this countywide. They thought they would have it all figured out by the end of April, but we're still waiting on exactly how it's going to roll out. Sounds like it's going to be an online training of about 30 to 40 minutes. You'll be completing it on your own time. If you need access to a computer or something, we can certainly set that up. It'll just be online. At the most, it would be one time per year, but maybe it would also be like part of the onboarding or orientation process for new members. And so we'll keep posted when it's ready to roll out.
Thank you. We're going to the Clean Water Division Outreach.
Okay, well, April is wrapped up, that's a busy month. Kind of a quick rundown. On the 7th, we had a bunch of tree planting where we had 105 trees. And that was the weekend when we had that huge weather advisory. We should have a lot of people at home. So a couple of trees came out, which really supported us. Dutch Brothers is actually one that came out. Good numbers. Actually, there's a little side story there. We're kind of gonna our source control guy Bob Patterson was in the business.
Yeah, Bob in there.
It was last year, not recently.
But really good idea. He was working with them about painting the mats inside, washing the mats outside. Let's get the mat clips to hang up over the inside mop stand and pull them up in there. Simple kind of solution, you know, I mean, where, you know, maybe you should kind of educate people too about partnering with Don't Drink and Drive. So, seeing if there's going to be a partnership there with Dutch Brothers, and, I was pretty impressed by the way that they communicated. If you ever get an email from them, they're really excited to tell us about coffee every single time. I'm looking forward to working with them. Send them hands out. The following weekend after that great Friends of Trees event, I mentioned we had 105 trees planted. Kids fishing derby. So thanks to Marie for turning me out of that. On that Friday, we talked to 80 kids to spun the wheel. We talked about this and that. 80 kids to spun the wheel on special needs day. We got to have 290 kids to spin the wheel with a clean water wheel. We asked them to trigger a question to give them a little kid tattoo or a clean water pen. So yeah, I got to talk to well over 300 kids there. I thought it was a really, really good event. We had colleges there, Jeremy's there, participants. If you're not there for the fishing, go for the bird watching. Okay.
That was phenomenal.
That was phenomenal.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah, the ospreys are up there, and the eagles are up there, chasing the osprey.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
As if like netting with the fish in 100 feet from the shore wasn't enough, the osprey would actually wait until. The kids line before they take them, but
and then the eagles try to take it from the
opposite. Yeah, exactly.
It is really, it was a really cool event.
So who really needs the dirty, right?
That's a good question. I think you asked right all the way. There's probably quite society where that dirty. Yeah, that's definitely an event we'll be back at next year. About the little kinds of and a great chance to have that next edition. Clean waters. Next weekend was Earth Day. We're talking about 145 kids that we spun the wheel anyway. They got great weather, somewhat unusual for the day out here. And so, yeah, I think all in all, we had really good reach that month and got to talk to a lot of people. Also some smaller events like Public Works and Child's Birthday. So something there. And then we also got to go hear Will Honiak's stories at Gardner Elementary, which was really, really fun. I'd say, you know, the only thought of my mouth was a little tired and smiling for like an hour and a half. it was just incredible to just listen to the story. It was super fun. With Don't Drip and Drive, we're moving along, and the Watershed Alliance is starting to contact some businesses to get them on board. We'll get about a dozen or so businesses on board. We'll start doing some events. I think we're going to pilot our first Weed Check event over at the Port of Vancouver, which is one of the partners in this grant. It seems like a really good audience and a good place to get our feet wet because, well, it's a closed facility, so we have any hiccups. So yeah, it's a good place to test out and kind of work out how we're going to operate that. Stormwater Department website is live.
Okay.
I repeat, the Stormwater Department website is finally live.
It's great. I like that.
Yeah. Not 100% yet. We need a few more photos here and there, and a few things here and there, but it's good that that's up and going. I want to thank Josh particularly for his incredible sharing and social media presentation. This has been a great help. Keep the message out on our social channels. And then I also want to give a plug. I think Andrew sent something to you guys about this, about the Watershed Congress coming up in a couple of weeks. And kind of Friday, that's May 18th. It's a lot of fun. Kids are working really hard the whole year. They get to present their findings in the morning in the AM session, and they sit in as a facilitator where you get to, you know, ask them some questions about, you know, their experience and kind of, you know, some probing of what they were looking at and give them some different things to think about. And then in the afternoon you work on a more interactive project. So it'll be a lot of fun. That's held at the WSU Vancouver campus. So,
I know they're looking for more facilitators.
Yeah.
Like 8 out of 30 in the campus.
Okay. Yeah, so they are definitely looking for more. They provide lunch for you. And it's just a lot of fun to do what they know to.
Who's the content?
Judy Buffer. So,
yeah, I can read that.
You already emailed it. I'll just come back.
Yeah, so I have the information.
Yeah.
Except I think it starts Aqua Buff.
It is Aqua Buff.
And I can't read my.
It's a Comcast document.
It is a Comcast.
Yeah, Aqua Buff. AQUABUFF at Comcast document.
So yeah, that's 18th Friday, sort of lunchtime. I highly encourage you guys. You have time in the morning or in the afternoon or both, just to volunteer to be a facilitator or help out anything. I think that's all I've got for. We had a stormwater department meeting a couple weeks ago, kind of discussing the stormwater clean-out assistance program, and so once our public works financial person is back in. We're going to run it by her to put out an RFQ for different pumpers who are able to pump out storm drains for private businesses and get them to put a quote out for us, a set price we're taking off of the leases for this program cleaned out. And and I guess that in hope will be overcoming a barrier to some of these businesses that feel like, well, you know, if I give this a call, and I might get $50 or I might get $150. Yeah, we're looking forward to getting that underway and hopefully getting some of the stormwater partners interested in that too. So we'll see how we'll move forward to contract with that.
Do we have a stormwater partners list? I know one was handed out at one point. Basically, who we are partner with and who's going to be attending?
On the Stormwater Department website, there's a contact page, there's a contact us page,
okay. And
that basically has all of the jurisdictions in Southwest Washington, and at the very bottom there's a list of partner organizations and agencies too. So yeah, go to the contact page. It doesn't have everybody's name, it just really has the website for the partner organization. But, should have the phone numbers and stuff on
I know that we, the partnership group, we were discussing some outreach possibilities, and I was going through that before I got here. I just had a question as to, I was wondering if some of the more detailed partnership possibilities were already part of the stormwater partners. So,
yeah.
And I lost my phone, so I was able to contact.
One of the big questions that we had was kind of the elephant in the room when we asked one of our partners exactly what and who are stormwater partners. Kind of been a loose group, and they started with a grant about 7 or 8 years ago. Kind of brought some of the jurisdictions together. When I was tasked to kind of reinvigorate that, I brought in the partnership a little bit to include other Southwest Washington jurisdictions and also to nonprofit organizations and agencies that work in the clean water world. So the question really was one that had been burning in my mind, you know, are people getting enough out of this meeting? Do we need to focus it more? It turns out that, like all groups, pretty much is self-selecting. The nonprofits that were there, could kind of just clear the air, like, look, jurisdictions are held by a permit, so we're kind of the drivers here. We also want to hear about what you guys are doing, and we also want you to hear about what we need to do so that we can find partnerships. So I think at the end of it.
So basically, it's just individual volunteers from different entities, basically, who get together. So the Stormwater Partners is its own group, in essence.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Which is pretty cool.
And it's not volunteers, it's really just different like agencies and organizations that send a representative. For example, I guess some of them are volunteers, but there are people from the Sandy Creek Watershed Council there. That's a volunteer board, but the Watershed Alliance, they're paid, so they come there. It was nice to hear the nonprofit organization to say, look, we understand that you're the list we want to know. We also have some ideas too, and it's good to find out that everyone's on the same page, that hopefully the timing.
I look forward to attending them, and I get an idea of kind of what's going on too. I didn't know if it was a mandate thing, or I forgotten about last time you explained the Stormwater Partners group and how it came together. I remember now that I just wanted to make sure that, it wasn't.
It is kind of funny, in the sense that, having, the permittees who collect the stormwater fee have to do things with that, they're very prescriptive, along with the organizations that can kind of do what they want, they're guided by a mission that they came up with. So, it's kind of getting that all on the table.
Thank you. Right.
Hopefully, in the future, we're getting close to getting an IGA. For Don't Trip and Drive, which has seriously taken half a year. That's the assigned by all these councils. We realize that we'll probably need another one, a broader umbrella one.
that'll help to strengthen the partnership with some of the schools.
And that's the standard meeting, right? The third Wednesday.
Third Wednesday, first month of the quarter.
Always the same location?
Not always the same location, but I'll send out an email before we had been having at the Water Resources Center, and they have a huge room, a little too big. So I'm moving to a room that was cozy. I was trying to get Luke Jensen. That would be the sweet spot there. But,
that's a good news.
Very yeah, it was like a book. I'm like, Wednesday.
How many people usually attend?
Usually we get about 22, 25. Yeah, so, you know, probably about five of those people are from Clark County, either between public health or in the water division. City of Vancouver is always there. Battleground is always there. Campus Marshall.
Luke Jensen.
Jensen, you know who that is?
Yeah. There's a couple of other places that I could recommend.
Yeah.
For a group that's only 23 big, there are a few places.
Yeah.
You might want to consider the meeting room that they have at Cascade Park Library, because that's plenty big, and there's no charge for that. You might also want to consider the meeting room at Three Creeks Library up in Santa Creek. There's no charge for that.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
No charge is a good thing.
Yeah, no charge is a good thing. So, I think the Three Creeks will probably
ask me on Google.
You would know where all the meeting rooms are.
I'm telling you, that's right. Yeah,
I'll check those out. One of the nice things that I kind of like having about at a county facility or somewhere like that is that I know I can get on the internet because usually give up.
The libraries are totally cool with internet. It's totally good.
No filters or whatsoever.
Yeah.
All
right. You're so easy. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah.
That meeting's going good.
Yeah. And
that's what I've got. Thank you. Next thing up is the annual report that happened last month and went really well. Michelle and Mark were both there, and since I was the one talking, I don't remember what I said, so Michelle took very good notes if you wanted to say a few things.
I know, but I didn't go over.
Look, I had my laptop.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Well, basically, you know, it's a great presentation. It hit the highlights, and it also emphasized some work coming out of the, actually from the research group, and pieces that really the common core needed to, that it'll become the core, so like the reserve fund. But it didn't make it stand out in a way that it was going to be a target.
Which it did.
I thought. You know, so, and then there was plenty of Q&A. People were really engaged, and you know, got the sense that they wanted to be there, they wanted to learn. You know, they just didn't make the statement.
Yeah, I felt we had a lot of support for what we're doing, and Mark Bolt said something about the good group, you know, just really good group to work with, and Julie Olson was interested in partnering up with the Conservation District because they've lost some funding, so she wanted to know if we had anything to do with that.
Yeah, thank you for the background information.
Yeah, sitting next to the pretty close to the counselors, and you know, I can hear them. I can hear them kind of on the front. A couple times during the presentation, one I think that was really it's resonated. I think was when you, Marie talked about the challenges we have with attendance in a group that meets you know every other month, and then we have you know people coming in, people going, you know, something starting in the middle of the year, and how challenging it is to keep momentum towards achieving anything. And so the I think the way you characterize the rationale for goals and objectives, so that new members can come in and immediately get up to speed at least relatively quickly, that's a powerful lesson for a lot of people. Is you have to have to have some kind of stated purpose, you know, that people can get their arms around. And I think that's kind of really well done.
We also talked about the orientation that we process that we put in play, you know, to get folks up to speed right away so that everyone's on the same page.
Yeah.
Fine tuning things as we go.
I think I want to come back to the goal and action items in the next, whatever the next presentation will be.
Yeah, we need to really follow through on that.
Yeah. Well, then I could get up there and say, if I'm still the chair, you know, this is what we said last year, and this is what we accomplished. So the more that we've shown that we're actually accomplishing what we're doing, and new incentives and new initiatives, and then, okay, and then here's our 10-year plan kind of thing, so that we're always looking forward.
And I thought, you know, I had a slow going, and even though it's been, like, I've been doing that 4 years, you know, it was hard wrapping my arms around it, but you know, that I could really operate in something tangible. So, as much as this was, you know, a passion of mine, and, you know, with everything else going on, having something to present or having something solid, if I felt like I was, you know, contributing to the commission, it felt a little rocky at first. So, but it definitely feels like it's taking shape. So, I'm not happy with it.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, a lot of people brought up some good points when you first come on, and there's no continuity, and every year you're doing something different, and then you feel like, you know, you're not accomplishing anything. Mm-hmm. Action plan is a good idea.
I think to Michelle's point, I think you kind of really kind of hammered in on this reserve thing as well. What's the number? We're not ready.
Yeah.
You did a really good job kind of deflecting some of those things. That's a, you know, that we want to be thoughtful about these things, and so it takes, you know, it takes some time to kind of think through what are you trying to achieve, and then what's a reasonable number, you know. And I think then we'll be ready next year to really talk that through.
Yeah.
You didn't want to pitch a really high figure, so
stay away from numbers.
Yeah. Just I like just saying the reason why.
Yeah.
You know, and given a couple examples,
yeah.
you know, for the assets, the age, and the following best practices for government policies, you know, just kind of throwing that stuff in just so they can start thinking and the numbers are coming through.
One note that I made, I don't know if anybody else picked up on this, but definitely Dean and I were talking about it afterwards, that I was getting a sense that the counselors were getting a little stuck on and confused about what year we were talking about, because the county budgets every 2 years, and so there were times of sense that they thought we were talking more about 2019 and not necessarily the current year of 2018, which then can help feed into having these longer term goals, so that then maybe we can talk to some longer term things next year.
So match what we're talking to the which budget year.
Yeah.
A lot of energy in the discussion, though. I was actually pretty impressed with the energy in the whole group about I think we have the year. We have the year. So I think we can make recommendations and, you know, for our mission, and I think we'll listen.
And I felt like it was a change from last year. Both Guiri and Guam were new, and so I really didn't think that they had much of a sense at all of what the Clean Water Commission was. And I think another thing that is helpful to keep doing, and it was helpful that Marie was talking, but then Dean was sitting up here and was also talking, so that Marie was talking about commission perspectives and issues or answers to the questions from that standpoint, but then Tim was talking from the division in the county. I still feel like the counselors don't always totally understand the division of that or whose roles are which. So continuing to try to make that clear, I think, will always be beneficial. But I thought it went really well, whereas last year was the first time that I've been part of interacting with the council, and so then getting to see what their perspectives were. It had a different feel last year, so this one I felt like was, they were, all the councilors were more informed, and it was pretty positive.
Was it a workshop kind of setting last year too, or a formal meeting?
It was, they were sitting in the big chairs.
Yeah, it was a formal meeting last year. I don't know how, if that lent to the,
yeah,
a little bit.
I think the second definitely does. It was still technically a work session, but this one was held in here,
and then I think last year I was more focused on who we are because there are a lot of new people and what we hope to accomplish, and this year it was like, okay, this is what we're doing. So if the same, if my members, you know, stay the same consistency, we'll have that. Okay, now we can go in more detail because they already know who we are. They know what we did last year, so if you get a bunch of new people, you're probably have to go back to this, you know, what we do. And okay, let's go to our goals. Oh, yes,
I'm going to head out, but I wanted to share one more thing. Also,
thank
Rudy for helping out with the big fest. It's a huge help for a ton of people. Like, I think,
I was doing the canines of clean water. That was really fun.
I just want to share this. I was passing around. You said some mock-ups isn't real, but it will be real soon. How we're going to kind of mock up the street sweepers. So have a look.
I saw that.
Do you like things fresh? So I know that the working groups, research and partnerships have been meeting and have some updates. They're on the Google Docs. I know Jeremy sent me the updated research this morning. And let me know if you can't see them or share them, because I'm not sure you get that invite. Outreach, we don't have our objectives. I'm lagging behind. I'm too busy doing outreach. So we'll get that. Hopefully we can meet in our group and get that done. And then I'll just open it up to conversations on any new ideas on these.
You want us to go in and we can kind of zip through the research?
Sure.
Do we have hard copies?
I have one of the goals and the research.
Yeah, our revisions. It might be helpful if we.
This is the one. Do you want to do
that? Can we read it? Yeah, can we get it to you? I should have written some. I apologize.
Here for me.
So I'll start going in anticipation of getting the hard copy. But so what we really how long did we talk about this? I think it was a good bit of time, kind of thinking about what we wanted. So it's nice to actually kind of take the time to think through what we wanted to accomplish. And a lot of it was really focused initially on the sustainability of the infrastructure. And so in all the maintenance activities associated with just trying to maintain this. And so we broke our objectives into three categories, some of which were accomplished last year, but need to have some follow-up work. And the first one is really getting a good understanding of the budgeting process for maintenance and improvement. And I think we've actually got the county thinking about maintenance and some of these capital expenditures in kind of a little different way than we have in the past, which I think has been kind of helpful to start categorizing. Because when you start to think about the way you spend the money, then you begin to kind of have a kind of a real world ability to assess: do we have enough? Do we have too much? Is it if we have too little, then how do we deal with that? So that's kind of what kind of leads into the whole idea of this reserve aspect. We talked a lot about the quantity of the reserve. We've done some research around the groups, and so we think we need to do more of that this year, get a better understanding of what the actual reserve number ought to be. And should it be, if you guys remember, there's Category A and Category B expenditures, and so we think we probably need to have some reserve for both of those, and so that's part of what we really are trying to accomplish. We thought we would investigate and report out on two other county systems' development fee structures. We've kind of got locked in on what we're doing here, and so kind of opening our eyes and seeing what we do in Clark County relative to what other people do, maybe get some insights into how we can more rationalize, you know, what we actually have for fee structures. Continue the input into the six-year capital planning process. We talked a lot about that. But then as we went through the meetings last year, I think we have two kind of new thoughts here that we wanted to get into our lists, and they're pretty concrete actionable items. And the first one is you guys remember, we talked last year in one of the meetings about the impact of population growth in Clark County, and people, you know, live in structures which have, impervious roofs add to these issues. And so what we thought we needed to do was to study the impact of population growth and report out, kind of our assessment in terms of what we see kind of on a long-term basis based upon the current available data to get a sense of what's going to happen to us from a maintenance perspective. It's all these people coming in here generating new infrastructure which need to be maintained. So a new infrastructure has less maintenance, but that's why it's got to be long-term, a long-term thought process. And then the other thing is we're going to put some effort into developing some understanding of the impact of rainfall events. We think rainfall, I mean, if you just take a cursory look at the amount of rainfall events, the amount of rain that falls in short duration periods in the Northwest, our climate is changing. And so I think it's important that we recognize that, because that's going to have some impact on the requirements for infrastructure. So we thought we'd start out, and we'll start out, you crawl before you walk, and you walk before you run. But we thought we'd initially just go out and get some data around that so that we have some information that we can use to represent whatever recommendations we have going forward. So.
We've been meeting recently, and I'm one of my contacts for Outreach and Possible Partnership was developers. I happen to know you, and I just started a construction job, and the boss was kind of shoes as it were. And one thing that he had mentioned, which kind of touches on the things you just spoke of, so I don't know if it's an issue at all, and you're supposed to do, but it sounds like it might be. One thing that he stated is that the percentage of land affected by the size of the new development going on to that land is not in proportion to the fee in which they pay. So let's say somebody has 5 acres, and they're going to build a 5,000 square foot building. They're charged based on basically the land in which that's around, so basically on the 5 acres. Whereas if they wanted to build that same structure on a 1 acre, it's possible that they might not even have to pay the fee, because there's nothing that they can do to put in that infrastructure to secure the stormwater requirements, which is kind of a catch 22. Why is that kind of going on there? So there's a hiddenness there.
I think it's a good point. So I think the key for us then is to try to get an understanding of this. Other municipalities, other groups of counties have probably addressed that. So the key for us is to try to get, what are the other people doing? So try to get some information around the peaceful trail.
Yeah,
that's
a lot of it,
Because it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And of course, there's people going to water, and not that kind of thing.
And then we had two of them, both from last year, that, and if you guys see this now, it's on the transfer park, so we'll want to make sure that we pick up on these. They're we effectively didn't get anything done on these two items, so we thought we'd just pass them off. But one was just, you know, trying to research and identify additional interface opportunities. I think you guys in the partnership group are doing a really good job on that, but that might be something that we could be kind of integrated into other groups. And then it's identify the lawn care provider groups that we can actually go out and talk with. So that's the status.
So I want you to bring up for the rainfall events, what I did bring up on the report, I found the Washington Water Center out of WSU had a study done just recently that because of the, I can't say climate change, but that's too political, some people don't believe in it, but that there is more rainfall events due to changes in the environment. That's just partial water resources. That would be the resource center?
It's interesting because last year's, and what I'm saying last year, I mean, 16-17 season, wet season, totally different from this year's 17-18 wet season in terms of frequency and duration and the intensity of the event. The only thing that's similar is that we're getting into a drought mode again, which happened pretty early last year, actually, too, after a big buildup of vegetation. So,
well, they're looking over like 20 years, and then they're using the modeling to determine the requirements for storm systems. So,
it's very 20 years.
Yeah.
It's so hard to relay the changes because if you go, you know, things are changing more towards larger events over, say, a 100-year period. Mm-hmm. But in that looking around the jet stream, if you will, as it adjusts, you go through 3, 4, 5 year periods of being extraordinarily dry, and people are like, what is that?
So there's a both the more intense events, but also a great variability around the impact.
Yeah. Makes it hard to feel like it's how short of your mind.
Yeah. Well, so people never think like first order effects, like the average you can look at other pieces, like, are there more events over a certain threshold? You know, is the peak size of rainfall events growing? Mm-hmm. Is the variation growing? You know, and that can, if it helps, there is a number of data sources for rainfall and precipitation data. The co-ops that National Weather Service is involved in, the ROS, the RAWS site, USGS, there's a lot of precipitation paired with stream gauges. Yeah. So even just a presentation of peak event sizes in terms of 24 or 48 hour intensity might be useful.
Yes. That's really what we're talking about for stormwater facility design. You're not talking about the total rainfall.
Well,
you're not talking about average rainfall. You're talking about the extremes. It's all about the extremes.
Okay. If you don't want buildings to flood.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other option.
Yeah, right.
Well, no, the other condition I saw was talking about the 24-hour large events that put the heavier stress on going from, if I remember, the average going from something about like around 7 times a year to like 12, 15 times a year. It's a double heavy thing.
How often do you get it at that size?
But still within your range.
Yeah.
Right.
It would be worthwhile to include something like that in the talk so that, you know, set up for public consumption, essentially, and information in the talk that Bernie gave the neighborhood associations. Because I think there's somewhat of an awareness, but there isn't really an awareness of the variability and what it means to public infrastructure and their costs. And those patterns, and I think it would be useful for them to understand. It doesn't have to be a lot of charts and graphs and stuff like that, but
something. That's a good idea.
Mark, did you say that the capital planning process, is that still something that they host in order to go basically public or any kind of
comment? Absolutely. There's a six-year planning process that is underway, I think, every 2 years. And so it's modified, and so part of what got us interested in that is that we we looked, I think now it's about 3 years ago, we looked at the list of projects, and there were, what we're finding is that we're really underfunded. And there's many ways you can characterize how we can come to that rationalization and that response. But I think it's pretty clear. And so a lot of the projects that were on the list are not being done. And so there's reasons for that. And I think a few years back we looked at it, and maybe there's not a good prioritization process. There's lack of funds. There's a number of reasons for that. So that's what really got us started to look at it. And it's not necessarily a lack of prioritization. Although I think we've helped improve the process, but it's really financing, funding the projects that are really the most important. And so does this commission have a role in trying to solicit community input, which is what we're really trying to do with outreach and partnership? Take that information and then feed that back into the county so that we can help improve the prioritization process, and that's what that's about. So.
I think I'm going to take your lawn care provider and put it on the outreach.
Okay.
Objective.
That makes sense.
You want the lawn care on the outreach?
Okay.
Well, yeah, and I was looking at, looking at this community groups and thinking that would be on the outreach as well.
Yes. Community, yeah. So, and we're working on our goals. Our long-term goals. It's great to have a bunch of them.
So on the Google Doc, can we evaluate everything not so fast? But it's been a while. I guess I need to join another invite to that. I may.
I think you are, but I will check and make sure that your name is listed on.
I will check and make sure that I can hop on there and take a look at what's on there. Refresh with that. So are you doing the partnerships?
Yep, I am.
So this is a copy of an email that I sent. As we look down to the partnership working group mission statement, we've decided to set up the mission statement first that ties into the overall mission, but the focus was our activities, seek to leverage strengths and opportunities with local and regional partners through resource sharing and collaboration. And then under that, and forward that, are the working group goals. And first is identifying and approaching potential partners. These are really near-term goals to set up a long-term framework. So, a lot of these will roll into future years as well. And we identify different sort of clusters, so Forest Service, State Forests, and sort of upper watershed managers or impactors. And then agriculture and some of the organizations around agriculture, parks and open space, which is primarily part of the parks, and home builders, developers, and contractors, which is all these working groups that she mentioned, and then commercial property owners, managers, neighbor and homeowners associations, and that this would be a transfer, essentially. So, if there are areas that it makes more sense for partnerships to work in, or this all goes to outreach, so TBD basically. Watershed associations, councils, including the Watershed Alliance and the Lower Columbia River Estuary Partnership. Fisheries related organizations, with the example being North Vulnerable Friends of Fish, and then stormwater partners, and a number of us made it to the stormwater partners meeting last week, which was really informative. So, and then there's a possibility that other stakeholders might be identified at public at planning commission and permit hearings. So that's an avenue to explore down the line. We've got plenty to work on in the earlier ones identified. So we elected to pick certain areas and explore. And basically what we're trying to do is identify models for collaboration, number two. So we want to get a sense of what people are doing and where they're looking for some kind of, where they have challenges, basically. And then is there something that,
Clark County, that the commission or some other of the partners that we're seeing, if there's some overlap here that can help move everybody forward. So we identified some questions for partners. Didn't copy that because that's not really essential, but so that we had a little bit of a script to start out with, knowing that the conversation would go, you know, go from there. But then also look at exploring land use management and planning partnerships as a way to achieve and maintain watershed health. You know, so some of the land use management and planning, it bubbles up into a lot of these land use categories, or these ownership or management or stewardship categories. You know, so three is more of a summary kind of thing, and the actual steps can be outlined more next year.
Oh, sure.
Once we get through the exploration. So that's where we got to be kind of separate meeting. And the other piece is that we're going to meet with Dean and Rod working. It looks like actually the 11th is good for Holly. And it works for me. So that's one of the ones that you would identify.
Yeah, it sounds like that should work. It might need more 8 a.m.
Meetings in June, I'm out of town. I am also going out of town from this Friday to the 14th. So I'm emailing, I will get it.
Yeah.
And I'll be checking my email. Okay, anything else for the partnership?
I was curious as to how the outreach to the school, unincorporated school. We're going. I know that was a couple of weeks ago that Andrew was...
Green schools?
Yeah, with the unincorporated schools to get them up to par on some kind of green program, kind of introduction where their fee permit was waived based on the education that they introduced. And this is all the schools outside of the green school system. Do you remember that, Andrew?
Sort of like last year.
There is an ongoing program that any school in unincorporated Clark County, that any school outside of city, that they can basically, we have a whole path, and if they fulfill certain requirements, then they can have their clean water.
Is that going? That's only been for about a year, right?
No, it's been actually a program that has been going since 2004, but it's gone through different iterations. So Eric and I revised some of the different criteria of how we can apply or how school can qualify and what the various things they need to do are. So it's it's in process. This is going to be the first year with this new set of criteria, and really what we were also trying to do is really strengthen, make it very clear, because there was a lot of murkiness in the past. So it seems to be going well, but the truth, the ground truth will be happening at the end of the school year when the documentation is all due. That's basically the status of that. And then there's a separate program that you might be thinking of too that actually solid waste does. It's called Green Schools. And they go into the schools and they work with them to get certification for Washington Green Schools, different modules. And one of them is a water one that has to do with water use in the school. And then there's another one that is school grounds that has to do with how to do with stormwater or planting trees or kind of dealing infiltration on site. So that's another that I think we've talked about in the past.
I was just hoping that that it's going well and thought that maybe, you know, if there could be something introduced to the developers in the way of certain criteria that's met, it might, you know, give them more of a, you know, incentive to basically just, you know, meet certain codes or be, you know, on the team with criteria or changing things in the way of, you know, preserving stormwater. I don't know, something set up is like with BC Waves, I've heard a lot of stuff, so I'm just bum tumbling on it. So I wanted to know how that was going, you know.
That's been looked at a number of times over the course of time that there has been a clean water fee or that there has been a stormwater fee here in Clark County, and that unfortunately the implementation of that, it wouldn't be clean, it would probably cost more than it would be worthwhile to even do it. So at this point, that is, any time it's ever been looked at, it's been tabled. So, but it does, that some kind of variation of that idea does get brought out. So I'll keep you posted when I can.
That's a lot, I'm sure.
Anything else on partnership? You know, when we were at the Klein Line, there was a gentleman that came over and started talking to Eric. I believe he said he was part of the River Junkies. Were they?
River Junkies?
Yeah.
River, they go and they clean up?
Yeah, anytime you're at a
fishing event, they clean up the water.
Oh, yeah. So anytime you find yourself walking next to a body of water, you pick up any trash, you can take a picture of yourself and send it to them, they'll give you a brand new fishing pole.
And they actually have events.
Yeah,
they have events where they'll go and they all have their little, you know, boats, and they'll go down there and clean it up. So
yeah.
It could be another partner. He seemed pretty interested in clean water booth. And
do they adopt river reaches or stream reaches?
No, I don't know if Eric got more information. I bring it up and I forgot. So. You know anything, Bob?
Well, Michelle covered it about the stormwater partners meeting. You know, it was a good opportunity to meet at least a number of people there. There was some kind of cities that were conspicuous to have some cameras in the show lot, so I talked to Molly Costa and see if we can't get her or someone else to show up. But, you know, I don't know. I'm still getting my feet wet, but.
Yeah, I think Captain Shuba have been at other meetings, you know, periodically. They're attended 100% for sure.
Yeah, was there someone from Ridgefield attended, or any of the other Ridgefield Center?
Well, Battleground's definitely there.
Yeah.
Neither of them are, they're not covered by a government, so they may not be as far as they may not be. I don't, they may not have as much of an interest at this point.
have a staff representative.
Yeah.
They don't have that program.
Yeah, they don't have one engineer.
Or the population projection for the Richfields.
Yeah, Richfield's growing enough that I can't see that maybe it's there to handle us.
Yeah.
Get ahead of it.
As a rural mushroom person, talking to develop Richfields. If you're going to put people there.
And I guess.
Yeah. Get them involved.
Yeah. And I'm. Oh, sorry.
No.
That the population data that of whether it's a large enough city or jurisdiction is based on 1990 population, which is why there's a little lag. So I don't know, maybe under the new permit, which should be issued the summer of 2019, I'm guessing we're going to also use population that is more current, but I don't
because I know in that article that you brought, David, when it was talking about population growth in the county, that was the part that was mentioned in the changes in the name and area. As far as development, it crossed my mind when you were talking, Holly, about conversations with developers, and that'd be an area I'd be interested in hearing more about what they run into. Their take on it, you know, as far as members of the public, because I know that's a big part of how Clark County's stormwater structure, from the conversation we had with Carrie, where he was highlighting that developers have the discretion as to whether or not they want to build it or whether it's in the county. And in the work that I've done, I've seen a lot of facility groups come in and then they roll over to the county, which is going to be picking up for Clark County a lot. They're going to be getting a lot that has been put in by developers. And lots of times what we'll end up seeing is facilities that are put together and they're going to need to be retrofitted. And there's going to be an additional cost and some budget thing again. So the developers I work with in the private industry area from the standpoint of trying to help with their stormwater part is the beginning of us just getting on that same page, because a lot of them just view it as that thing that needs to get signed so that they can do their job. And I don't think there's so much like a complete disregard for stormwater as much as it's just the areas where there's a hassle. And there are things that are really tangible that I see that I wish there was a way to change little things. And that's something that I thought down the road, not to bite off too much in one meeting, but parts where we might be able to take a role gathering that information and looking at like, okay, well, how can that requirement be changed to be a benefit to them, but also achieve the goals or be more effective for less cost for everybody? It's either more cost for the developer or more cost for the county later. Just thinking ahead of time might be able to.
In the worst case scenario, you know, if it's through our labor sort of change, it has to come out of the developers or go
right.
I would sit down too. So there are certain cases where this could be really important.
Yeah.
So, or at least a very good benefit for the next system that's not, doesn't have to be a hassle with them. We have to just tuck a leash.
Yeah.
And you might have some contacts for Holly to follow up on in that.
Yeah.
You know, you can bring people or the organizations to talk to.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the developer I've worked with in Gresham primarily, he's open-minded to the objectives of what stormwater is doing, but it's not his forte.
Okay.
And so it's been interesting to get his input from that angle. But then the work that I've been doing recently has been with Clark County for helping with their own maintenance teams. And we were going out and looking at facilities that the county's installed and also the ones that developers are putting in. And having a conversation right away of just looking at some of them and being like, the developer's being in charge, he's spending money to put this in, and then he or she's going to have to change it, or the county when it comes on is going to have to change it just because it's a design approach. A really simple example that we see in a lot of them that I think would be nice to change somewhere down the road to advocate is they have to plant them before they can get signed off to develop. And when the construction happens, they get destroyed. So the developer is required to build it, put the soil in, plant the whole thing, have it as a functioning biosoil with the plants in. Then it gets totaled, and they have to clean it up and plant it again. And the question we raised from working on it is, what if you installed the soil, the drop construction mat, and farm mat in the bottom? The water, stormwater can come in, all the sediment can go on, all the trash, contract can come on the top, but it's still doing some biofiltration. Then we'll peel that out and then plant it. And just that little cost saving, I'm sure every developer would be happy to see happen. But the requirement currently is for the plant. So that's one thing where I thought in the future for us, as far as partnerships or advocating and bringing that forward, is a little thing. So you could still be achieving the same objective without.
Well, that's the purpose as far as like even our county road, is that right?
Pardon?
Is that developing our county road as well? Are we talking about like last 12 and 12 like, roads?
No.
No, that'd be public. So I have two contacts that might be good for your development.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Southwest Washington Contractors Association. They have an office in Hazelville. It's developers and builders. And then there's the Building Industry Association, the BIA, that means.
Building Association.
Building Industry Association.
And Holly, I've got the phone number and email for Clark County Parks.
I could send you something.
Now, this could just be just for parks and open space, because I know they're located in the same way. There's parks and recreation, and then there was parks and open space. That was just the main parks and recreation.
Overarching, and so if you want me, I can look more.
It's just the one I've been right.
Anything else for partnerships? Bless you. I'll speak for outreach since I'm busy. So I've been going to the Neighborhood Association meetings on a regular basis, and I've definitely made some good contacts with the leaders, and then I saw them at the Klein Line, and I saw a lot of people I knew at Klein Line from the Neighborhood Association. People are very important. So now it's more, you know, getting on my face and, you know, hi Marie, you know, and I walk in kind of thing, which is good. It led to us talking at the Sunnyside neighborhood and had lots of good questions, lots of good ideas, you know, to bring up and kind of fine-tune our presentation. Working on, we need to get together and work on the stormwater homeowner associations. I started a contact list, and that's one of our goals. But again, there's a lot of things we could be doing here, but we have not met. It'd be nice to have everyone here and do it. So we are moving forward. We will continue and get our goals together, hopefully by next time. It's been a busy 2 months for sure. So any questions for outreach? I think once we get our list going, then we can put it out to the group and spark some interest. So hopefully next meeting we'll have a solid plan we'll send out.
Are you saying with the neighborhood associations, are you going to a group of multiple ones or someone particular?
It's all the presidents.
Yeah.
Me.
At the, okay.
Yeah, once a month. Yeah. And then from there you can hopefully get invited to the smaller groups and do some outreach.
How many HOAs are there in Texas?
HOAs? See, no one has that data. That's the one thing.
Right.
So we're starting to compile. Again, working with, like, the newer developments. I know the ones that are in Clark County, so, you know, like, it's easy for me to make a list. But going back to the... We had a couple from that Carrie wanted information on, so we asked the group as a whole. And one of them, I got hold of a contractor that all together, and then the other two people just didn't know. So they don't even know like what little old neighborhood they live in sometimes. They know that they're part of a bigger association, but they don't know that there's subdivision. So just kind of getting out there trying to help Carrie knock on doors. And we had a list of questions for that the homeowners asked, and I just got it back today from Carrie. So we'll post that so everyone can see. You know, people that want to help and do their own. And I don't have it in front of me, so.
It comes from more than not, it's just the county, isn't it? Because I know that when like folks have a question about, you know, can I turn my little shed into, mother-in-law den or something, the homeowners is basically that has to go right to the county, even though the homeowners association, you know, they've got the, basically the infrastructure and the rules and guidelines as to what you can do or cannot do. But I guess, you know, like my mother-in-law, they're in a homeowner association, they just got called for kind of extending the little shed.
Oh.
So it was county, but the homeowner association basically just, there was a number that just referred them right back to the county.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really yet a form group yet, which is so confusing.
Well, when you start talking about living spaces, then it's definitely county. There's a lot of other factors involved. And they're looking at the whole rules for guest homes and accessory dwelling units. So that's, yeah. But as far as people wanting to build a shed or have a higher fence, that would be the Homeowners Association.
By the way, I did speak to David Lasher, or Doug Lasher, about HOAs.
Oh, okay.
And the property records, they don't have any automated way of identifying the HOAs. It's not a piece of information that he felt was in the data sets. So that's a little bit of a challenge.
It is.
So is there a place where that information is? If you're at this address, you belong to
almost have to look at all the plaques and see which ones have HOAs and which don't.
Get
a private detective.
With a lot of cops on their hands to do the research.
Which is why closing that loophole, I think that's what Carrie talked about last time. Now the HOA has to be created.
In order
for the final
plat group. Yeah. But there's a period of time when HOAs may or may not have been created, you know, before, et cetera, et cetera. And so how many of those can be other subdivisions are there out there?
So that's definitely a long term goal, but to at least start with some, I do have a list of some. Maybe drafting you like a, you know, canned letter. Hey, we're with the Clean Water, and we'd like to talk to you. Know that hey, and kind of have maybe, you know, public outreach, you know, print them for us, and then start sending them out and see what kind of responses. A lot of them, it's like a property management company that's actually managing the HOAs for developers. So that one person might have, you know, several, which will help build on the list.
Being a visual learner. Bit of a map. Is there a resource that at least shows all the facilities that Carrie's trying to find the others for?
I can ask the.
I know that there's layers of various GIS stuff at the county level that is completely accessible by the public, and then there's domains that are internal. But if there was anything that was able to be shared that we could look at, I have a problem that a lot of us got to be seen versus printout. It would be nice to be able to at least see, okay, here's all the facilities highlighted on the map of the unincorporated areas of the county. And then we can look at that and say, okay, here's it. Just be able to target it a little bit more.
Oh, okay.
I think Jeff has shown us that map. There is a map.
Kind of briefly showed it.
Yeah, there's a map there. A little something on the county. He showed it to us in one of our subgroup meetings.
Yeah, Ron has said there's a on the GIS, but it is a layer that's not covered. Yeah,
and
I'm not sure.
The storm drain one that like shows the connection of everything. Excuse me, I think that's more internal, but there's a.
You can see the strong lines in the
layout. Yeah. But I think there should be something to show the facilities.
So yeah, we can do. I mean, we've got everything inventoried, every single asset, whether it's the pipe, the manhole cover, the culvert, the catch basin. I mean, basically everything. So what I would want to do is to be able to filter down to what would be most relevant, because it would be
Yeah. Well, if we could look at the poor soils and then maybe number of failures and narrow it down that way, that would be a good targeting.
Right, and they're working on that data right now, even what was failed versus,
age and any of that.
No, no, he's got it, and there's color coding.
Oh, okay. Like hot spots. Yeah, that would be good.
Okay, so I will.
So then we could at least, if we're going to participate in trying to find the HOA owners or owners that are outside the HOA, trying to find all the mystery HOAs in the county, we could just cut that task out. Just go from there.
Start with the stormwater facilities and work back to who's responsible.
Yeah, the whole, for myself here, it's been a real process of learning over the last year. You know, I'm just kind of like, okay, how do things go? Oh, that's permit required. Okay, that money has to be approved there. And I'm kind of just figuring each of those little elements of it and trying to get that perspective of it. And then I lost track of where I was going with this. I had something. Yeah, it comes back. They're trying to narrow down those targets.
Yeah, I'm trying the information, like a methodology that would help targets.
The soil information is an interesting piece. It's part because if you're, relying on infiltration everywhere, which seems to be most common path, the other piece is groundwater table. And the third function that overlays that is that some of the development, there's enough earth moving going on that this is compacting that the soil is massively changed. So the soil conditions are not the same as
I really appreciate this. It's nice. The breakdown of the different types of stormwater facilities. I guess the part I was going to say when I was thinking about understanding everything was that I get the impression that there's kind of a some corrections that have happened and moved to kind of do things correctly in the future, but then there's all these assets that are like with the mystery owners. We're kind of at that point in between of like providing good information and partnerships for how do we avoid problems in the future, but we're kind of cleaning up everything that's come down over the last few decades that we have. So.
Anything else for outreach? I have two things for the commission. One is that Janice had asked about social media, and Eric had a really nice reply about the do's and don'ts. And I think we should probably have a social media policy in our part of our commission. Don't go blindly out there posting on Facebook representing the commission. It needs to have certain guidelines. So he has some. He sent an email, so formally put that in.
Do you think that would be something to put in the bylaws, or do you think you should just have a separate...
Like a separate policy. Just so, and we could bring that in orientation and let people know. If you're part of the group and you'd like to post, this is what you should do, or these are the things that you can't do. You know, just some hard guidelines there.
It might be good to have a
husband
for the bylaws behind it.
Okay, so put it in the bylaws and reference it, or just put it in the bylaw as a separate item?
Don't we really follow the body of the county? So don't we use that as a primary?
That was basically what Eric was outlining.
Yeah, and so I'm wondering if we just reference those in our bylaws. That may be one way to do it. We don't have to keep up with things. It's a changing world, don't we?
There's a Section 7 County and Department Expectations. You could put them there. Mm-hmm. It certainly would be an expectation that we'd follow right now.
Yeah. And actually, I was going to mention that this year is bylaws are reviewed every 2 years instead of the year to review.
Oh, okay.
So, actually, I'm not sure whether one of your workers.
Think about that.
Did you research in the last year?
I think
the
research.
Last time it was.
Last time we did.
Yeah. It was towards the end of 2020. So, yeah. It feels
like it was. Yeah. You want to add that to our list? We can, yeah. Yes. Sorry, we can do that.
Well, the. Open Public Meetings and Public Records Act training.
Yeah.
So that's just going to be restricted to the Public Records Act. And the first, I don't know if it's Nancy, because they call it.
Well, so that meeting?
Yeah, overall, basically, it's just how we present, you know, what would I be claiming and not claiming if I'm not speaking.
So that's going to be a training that will be, we won't have it. The commissioners, yeah, it's coming down from above, so you don't get to.
Oh, no, no,
yes. Form it the way you want it.
Oh, no, no.
So,
I was just wondering if that would include basically catching on, you know, especially so if we, you know.
It might.
Public,
I hope we'll see.
You know, public.
You know, it might be good to have a review of them at our next meeting, because that would help groups to understand that piece, where they might go, where it might go, how it might be referenced,
okay.
What really pertains.
Okay. Yeah, everyone's welcome to review and then be part of the group. And then my other item to bring up is I have next year's report in Google Docs. I'm not sure if I can share with everyone. It's just right now it's a tracking document so that we'll have it ready next year. We'll have it ready by November so we can get on the schedule. So you feel free to go in there and anything you attend, just add it. I'll clean up a little bit because I still have the old stuff in there because a lot of it's repetitive, so I didn't want to just like totally get rid of it. So feel free to go in there and just add your conferences, add your meetings, add your group meetings or whatever you want, how we want to track those.
And which doc is that specifically?
The draft 2018. The 2018 annual report.
In.
Comfortable going in there, just send me an email saying, hey, I attended this conference and all that. Because we also had that at our presentation. We talked about various things that people are doing. It just showed the council how committed we are and how community-spirited we are. This is why we do this also. So this is a very positive point. Okay, anything else commissioners would like to bring up for the group?
Is there anything to look at the overall goals? And I think those goals, the overall goals for the
last
commissioner
time?
And last in the meeting notes for that being the 3 points.
Yes.
Recommending practical actions to achieve healthy watershed and provide healthy watershed performance for the system, achieve this in cultivating a more informed community.
Yes.
We need to discuss it anymore, and that's pretty much covers it.
Well, I think as first this time we were kind of focusing on our groups, and then you know we start looking at that group one and start adding to it.
So we'll roll those up into these now.
We can roll it, or we can have more. I mean.
Yeah, well, another way to think about it is the think about those as objectives, and some of these things we call them objectives, but they're kind of strategies around achieving objectives. And so there may be some way to kind of numerically tie the individual group objectives into the larger elements, and then maybe we may find that we have some holes that we want to close up with the individual group objectives. So I think it's a good exercise to do.
Okay.
We may want to do more is get a group, a smaller group subset, you know, maybe one person from each of the groups together, and we can do that together.
So oh, okay. The chair of each subcommittee.
We can do that. I think it's a good idea because it's important to tie back, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I believe I have that in the docs too. The group action plan I started drafting, so again, we can start doing that.
Was this a tentative topic on the background bird habitat certification plan?
So that's for next meeting. The Watershed Alliance has contacted me, and so she and Columbia Land Trust and the Coral and Ottawa presenting that they're bringing back their backyard certification program. So, yeah, they're coming back to us.
Oh, wow.
I'm
actually really perfect. It's something I've been thinking about, especially as we were talking about types of stormwater facilities at the last meeting, is that, you know, the idea is that we're filtering the water, preventing direct runoff in the surface water systems, and at least preserving some modicum of pre-development hydrology. The water is going into the ground in this area rather than moving on. And, you know, as Michelle had hinted at earlier, that's not always going to be the case, especially in pre-development hydrology. But something that I was thinking of is, okay, so we need to manage this water, but what else can we be doing? What else, you know, the ecologist can be, what else are we losing during development? When you turn farmland into housing, you're in many cases losing a lot more than just water infiltration. You're losing all the hedgerows and fence lines and this other habitat that for places where wildfires can just hang and birds and perch and live and stuff. And so, you know, something to think about is not just backyard habitat and infiltration of water, but how can stormwater facilities double as habitat, so on. And that's something I've been thinking about a lot for the last couple of months, how to make those facilities do more work. And it's a ball filter that's not doing anything other than getting relatively clean water infiltrating into the ground. But if you've got a swale that's planted in 6 layers of plants and it has overstory and understory ground cover, then all of a sudden you've got yourself some pretty good habitat for the little wildlings. So I think that's perfect. It's exactly what I've been thinking about the last 2 months.
Good. And possibly giving developers another option as opposed to, you know, just, you know, having to, you know, dig as you told, or what have you, you know, and then another option.
Right.
And not work out, so that's just my, you know, hopefully.
Yeah. Or Brainwave I have today. You know, I don't know if we have any, I don't think the county really subdivision has any requirements for parks or whatnot, but people, in addition to birds, people want places to play. So if there's ways to start meshing that habitat creation or preservation, places for human beings to, you know, play in their own neighborhood and deal with stormwater, there's, you know, still a cost, and you know, it might require some kind of policy push from higher up, but
no, I think it's really good. You know, did any guys remember that remember working at Swamp? There's a Swamp.
Oh, yeah.
Program that was really about integration of some of these stormwater, eliminating or reducing the number of stormwater kind of prisons and turning it into something where people actually, there's quality of life that comes into that for wild things and people.
Yeah.
And so there's, that's so it's kind of tied back to that, but I think that may be a way for us also to. We can think about that through the 6-year, the improvement capital. So there's ways for because some of that's true partnership between the contractors developing these things and then some of the benefits of the county, and there may be some way to kind of think about expenditure capital in a different way. There's ways to get this stuff done. It's just you've got to think about things a little differently than what we're doing.
Right, for the developer, maybe it's an additional cost for this park and stormwater facilities and so on, but then it makes the neighborhood more desirable.
Yeah.
And there may be some funds available from county improvement capital, you know, if there's enough thought process to put into that. So, here's a good piece of
it. It seems like the wrong one, so two roads and things.
If you talk about inconsistent services, you know, now it's one of those pieces. Have some value on it. It's interesting in the conservation district information we talk about part of the potential mission. Future going forward might be looking at doing that more and valuing protected forestry and ag lands as providing those kinds of services, including stormwater services and setting up some kind of mixture. It wasn't clear exactly how far they might go with that, but in some way to recognize that.
No, I totally think that'd be nice, and that's the future direction, but I think it's good in multiple objectives.
That was what the Swamp was about, and the Swamp program was, you know, we're trying to get it, it's never the attraction. It never got the attraction on
it. Where does it come from?
It was in this, we had a group, before we were broke up into the three different subgroups that we've got now, there was, in those days, we kind of subset teams into other projects, to kind of technically define projects, and one of them was partnering to do these kinds of things a little bit smarter, you know. And there, you know, there are situations where there's stormwater kind of prisons, fenced. Deep holes, you know, and then there's like three or four of them in a row, and there's obviously, you know, some lack of planning associated with that. You've got four of these things fenced in right next to each other. It just doesn't make any sense. And so it was really targeted at how do we kind of partner and think better about these things. But it just never made progress. But I think we can actually do it with the way we're structured right now.
But I think that the from the outside, the larger kind of philosophical thing that we have is trying to move towards community planning.
Right.
So exactly. Community partnerships are doing that planning, because what you have now is basically an independent landowner development system. So privately owned chunk of territory, and you want to develop it, you got to meet certain requirements. You pick your chunk to meet those requirements and facilitate everything and develop as is. There's no broader piece looking at the watershed connection, the connection to the neighbor's water facility, biofacility. So it's all private in each little plot. And so when I was younger, I remember bringing that up, and everybody thought I was like just presenting kind of like a dictatorial, some college's dictator that just like designed their council. Which is not that bad to me, but I understand
the examples that in Clark County where planning like that has actually occurred. So it's it's building on those kinds of things. We toured one of my kids before we even work. I think so, it's a stormwater treatment that's a great
team
walking trails, little lakes,
Well, the city of Richfield really has a community plan. They have the parks, they have the walking trails, they have a lot of requirements, and it's not just every developer has to go by those requirements. So they're really trying to look at the city of Richfield as one big community and integrate it, everything together.
Yeah.
And then it's a big draw for people to move up there.
Yeah, I think part of it depends on the size of the land available and the timing of when it becomes available. Because in our area, it did not become available all at once. And so, there's a sequential thing going on. And some of the ones that get in first, they have a lease requirement. And then there are implications that are observed in them. We had to do something. So the next batch of four, then, they're different, slightly different.
Well, that's the part that I jokingly refer to, a little bit more of an overarching piece, but the reality of where that sentiment comes from for me is the fact that the nature of these things, the environment, the natural environment that we're delineating all of our invisible lines on top of does not operate in that way. The water's flowing through the So having that type of foresight, it's like, well, yes, but this is a watershed here, and this is where this is flowing and feeding into. That's the bigger puzzle of spending off some time. That's the bigger puzzle. It's harder to figure out. Because if you just allow it to come in each little parcel piece, then you're continually trying to address,
Different topic, Maria. Finish that. I think next, we're kind of going on the limb. If we can block out some time for our next meeting in July.
Yeah.
I think the research group, we should be prepared to present our recommendation around this reserve and the thought process that goes around it for next meeting. And we're going to want to get. You got three people in the research group who got our thoughts into it. So I think it's really important to get everybody here, and then we'll. We want to integrate your guys' thoughts into it because small subsets of ideas, and then we'll. And I think through Andrea was to report, pass it off to the county.
Okay.
That's good.
And then nobody else has anything. I got a couple of things. So what has for years been referred to as the Board of County Councilors, they are really officially renamed Clark County Council. So we're hearing that that's what that is. Really, that actually came from the charter that was approved, but it's only been a year and starting to And then the county as a whole is getting a new telephone system, different buildings in different locations, it would be implemented at different times. I believe everyone in this building, the public service center, we are all on the new system. And so when that happens, we're getting the new area code. The old numbers will continue working supposedly for about 18 months. But the new area code is 564. Mm-hmm. So if you are seeing that on your caller ID, and that it's totally county, I feel like I always have to preface with people like, "Our area code is." I know it's strange. It's not 360.
So we've got just county offices that are going to Clark County offices that are going to get that area code.
It's for all new numbers.
Similar to what 971 was in the Portland area, where it sort of went on top of 500.
Yeah. Because I think they're just running out of numbers from 3 years ago. And unfortunately, implementing the new phone system just happened around the same time, so we're being considered with new phone numbers, even though we're
changing. But
that's interesting. I was dialing a number just the other day thinking, they've got to be running out.
Yeah, 360 is not just Southwest Washington. It's really Western Washington outside of Seattle. Because I remember when Clark County, when it was 206, and then that was the area code here, and then it changed to 360.
Yeah, 206 and 509,
right? Yeah. 509 on the east side,
And that was it. Who's the provider is for the phone service?
It's Voice Over IP. So I'm trying to remember.
Hopefully it's not IBM, because the state of Oregon has such a Voice Over IP. And it's very convenient because when the internet goes down, we have no way to communicate. Except for a staff like who know each other's cell phones. So first I thought putting on eggs. As a chicken farmer, I can tell you, putting all your eggs in one basket, there's a reason why that's a proverbially bad idea. And we've certainly experienced it, but the state of Oregon is apparently on the verge of suing IBM for failing to have a reliable, stable system. So hopefully you went with another vendor.
I'm trying to remember not the vendor. I don't believe it was IBM, though. But the one thing, too, is like the 78th Street Ops Center, first of all, they haven't gotten switched over, but second of all, when they do get switched over, they also will have a dedicated landline because they are an emergency operations center. I believe Cressa is as well, and so I don't know for sure, but I'm imagining they also have a landline that they will need to get.
We have a C11 line as a backup. So when our Comcast goes off, we use the CenturyLink T111 or vice versa. I'm not sure which one you guys want, but we do have a backup system.
You probably could go watching.
Now that computer goes down, you're done. Okay, so we have 15 minutes left. Would we like to break into our working groups, or we would like to call it a night?
We don't have anything else to do right this moment.
We'll probably wait till Jeremy's turn.
Okay, so I'll send some links out and some information that I've written down here. We will see you in July.